The Staffordshire Bull Terrier Society of New South Wales is proudly sponsored by Black Hawk Pet Foods. Let's hear from Louise from Black Hawk about what makes Black Hawk so good.
We all do like to be feeding our dogs ingredients that we know. So all our ingredients are from local farming partners. We manufacture our food in regional Australia. And with our adult dog food, it is actually free from wheat, corn, artificial preservatives, colours and flavours. So basically your dog is getting everything they need and they're not getting anything they don't need. Our belief is with our products, if they're not good enough for our own pets, they're not good enough for yours.
The Staffordshire Bull Terrier Society of New South Wales is proudly sponsored by Black Hawk Pet Foods. Black Hawk Pet Food. Every ingredient matters. Welcome to the Dog Show Show podcast, presented by the Staffordshire Bull Terrier Society of New South Wales and featuring Kim Reader. Oh, welcome to the latest episode of the Dog Show Show podcast. My name is Adam. I'm here with Barbie as usual. And of course, on the line is our Staffordshire Bull Terrier expert and, well, dog expert, Kim Reader. Hello, Kim.
Hi.
Hello.
Now, we had a very interesting conversation, and I love we get to have these conversations with these people. We had a very interesting conversation a few episodes back with Sarah Hemstock, and she is, of course, a part of legendary Hemstock Staffordshire family from England. Her family involved in the very, very early, in fact, involved in getting that breed recognised and registered. But we had a conversation with her about DNA of dogs. Let's just take a minute to have a listen to what Sarah said about DNA testing in our episode that we did a couple of months ago.
So with the the lineage, what line was yours, M or R?
It was all M line, basically. Yeah. That was it. That was all my dad was interested in, M line.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so with today's
that's the stuff
dogs,
that goes back to Brindle.
Yeah. With the today's dogs.
Yeah.
Can you see the influence in the lines today? Of those lines?
You can. Yes. Yeah. Okay. I'm a biologist. I've done loads of genetics and stuff like that, but I'm not an expert.
Yeah.
Like the latest thing on this coefficient and stuff like that says that anything like probably four generations back, it's not really that influential. But I'd actually disagree. I've got a dog and a bitch that both are M-line bred, both go back, but through completely different dogs, you know, on those lines, what I was telling you about.
Yep.
So one goes back on South African lines, other one goes back on English, through English champions. They're both identically marked. They've both got identical head and expression. And I do mean identically marked, where they've got an actual red circle on the forehead, both in the exact same place and things like that.
Mm.
So, yeah, okay. I agree with the science. I agree with, like, it's all probabilities, and probability says that, like, you know, six or more generations back, it's not really going to roll.
Mm.
But we're loading the dice, aren't we, by picking what we want, you know, as breeders. We're loading those dice. So I pick dogs that remind me of the dogs when I was a kid. So clearly, you know, that dice is loaded to produce something that I remember from being a kid.
And it brought up a really interesting question, and we've had a bit of a discussion about this, but it brought up a very interesting question was, should we DNA test and why? What's the benefit to it? Kim, should we be DNA testing dogs?
Well, if you're talking about health testing dogs, I think that it can be a very useful tool in relation to if you've got a breeding program and you do not want to be having, you know, dogs with health issues. And I think that, you know, in the old days, even though we bred with a breeding plan and managed to avoid or eradicate those problems without testing, it is handy to have testing.
Mm.
Makes it a bit easier. But having said that, I don't think you need to DNA every dog there is. There's some registers where they do require a DNA. And then in Queensland, the Purebred World requires a DNA, but no other state does when you register your dogs. So there's a bit of a, you know, difference within each state on how we do things, but that's not any different to anything we do in Australia. Every state's got a different way of doing it.
Yep.
I think that in the long run, especially for purebreds, that probably a DNA test as part of registration will be a good thing, because we do have registration bodies with dogs that aren't purebred.
Mm-hmm.
And then they are DNA registered as well, DNA tested to be registered as well. So I suppose it's a record of purity and of the breed or not.
Yeah. Well, question off the cuff, we hadn't sort of discussed this at all, but what would be a percentage? Like if you were to register your dog, would your dog need to be 99% pure, 90% pure? Like what are we, is it that's not really a thing at the moment, or we don't actually know what that would look like?
Well, they have to be purebreds. I don't know the statistics where there's experts on that, but I'm sure if you're a Staffordshire Bull Terrier and you're a purebred, you'd have to be 100%
Staffordshire. Yeah, which would be very interesting, wouldn't it? Like it would might actually put a few people's noses out of joints if they've thought they've got purebreds and maybe there is something else in there that they didn't know.
Well, that can happen. I mean. Happened before the DNA testing.
Yeah.
That we would know if something. I can remember as a very young child when we got our first Stafford and our second show was in Canberra. Another lady from Sydney turned up with these young puppies and my mum said to her, "Are you sure they're Staffords?"
Mm-hmm.
And they went around the ring and they had these big bushy tails
mm-hmm.
My mum went, "Oh, I don't think they are, Jen."
No.
Yeah.
Anyway, it turned out, no, she'd been accidentally mated by a German Shepherd.
Oh, wow.
So when they grew up, they definitely weren't Staffords. We didn't need a DNA. We had our eyes. We could see that was the case. So that sort of thing does happen, and people do do things that, you know, are obvious. Like if you put two red Staffords together, you can only get red or white.
Mm.
You can't get the other colours. So if there's a red mating, as we call it, and there's a brindle puppy standing there or a black puppy standing there, you think, something's gone wrong.
Something's happened there.
So, I mean, there's a lot of that evidence that you could work out for yourself. But as I say, the testing does help. It's very accurate. Well, it's scientific, so that makes it, you know, it's locked in then, isn't it?
So it's a tool for breeders. How do breeders use it as a tool? You were sort of talking about genetic testing and perhaps issues with the dog. What would we be looking for, and how would the breeder use that?
Well, for Staffordshire Bull Terriers, the testing, the only testing that we have for health is L2 and hereditary cataracts.
Okay.
There are some other little issues. Staffords are very robust. They don't have much wrong with them.
Yeah.
And those things they do have wrong with them, you can't test for anyway.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, they're the only two things that we've come up with. We have eradicated hereditary cataracts. We're not on the hereditary cataracts list anymore. Mm. It was a line specific problem. It was not a breed problem. And it came from an area in England where I think we've mentioned in the past that during the war they used the Labrador, and that gave us those problems with HD and hereditary cataracts.
Now that's an interesting thing for me as well with the Labrador, or using different types of dogs in those early days. Would those issues still come up, or have we had enough generations since then that they would be completely bred out?
Well, the cataracts is, but the problem with things like HD is that it's a polygene.
What's HD? HD, what's that?
Hip dysplasia.
Okay, right.
So it's a polygene, which means it can pop up any time. You can have generations without it, and then one pops up.
And no real test for that necessarily. I mean,
there's no test.
Yeah.
So That's the issue with that. But, you know, they've proven over the years, specifically with German Shepherds, that if even if you breed away from it, you're never going to eradicate it.
Yeah. So it can't be bred out. You can't choose.
Well, you
not
can have less of it. You're just going to get a polygene, which means it'll pop up every so often.
There's no real way to control that.
No.
So what are the if we're using it as a tool to produce better dogs, generally speaking, across the world as well, like not just in our particular breed, what are the downsides to it? Could it be used, like, I mean, I think we touched on in that episode using it as a bit of a weapon. Could it be used as a weapon? Could it be used?
Well, breeders, when they are wanting to control particular aspects of breeding programs, you know, spread rumours about dogs and their hereditary, purpose and why to use a dog and why not to use a dog. And, yeah, they can you know, make up stories, and it can be a negative thing, but they've always done that whether they had testing or not. The thing is, I suppose it's a blessing that you can now test the dog and say, well, that's not correct. That doesn't carry that. Before you couldn't, you had to manage the rumour.
So if somebody's, you know, talking smack about your dog and saying it's got this problem and that problem, somebody comes to buy a dog from you, you can say, well, no, here's the genetic testing that says it's clear of that problem that people are saying it's got, other than this, as you say, these genes that could just pop up randomly, which you don't have control over.
Well, that's right. In the past, you would speak with the breeder and hope that they were telling you the truth, that their dog didn't carry that, it's never produced it.
Yeah.
But now there's scientific evidence to say, well, here we go, no, that doesn't carry it. I mean, it's like L2. You can breed with a carrier because there's enough dogs out there to use that are not carriers. So if you use a carrier to a clear, you just make sure that you continue on with the clears.
Okay.
So then you could still use a carrier, but then make sure you put it to a clear.
Yeah. Yeah, if you run two carriers, it's obviously going to probably come out, but if you run a carrier to a clear, and the likelihood is you have clear puppies, and you should be okay.
Yes, and the percentage is pretty good of clear. And then there's a lot of clear by parenting, so lots of both parents are clear, so then the puppies have to be clear.
Mm.
But, you know, there is an attitude with people that, oh, I wouldn't use a carrier, which is very much shows that they don't understand the fundamentals of breeding. But, you know, what do you say? Oh, I'm not going to use a carrier, well, but I'm going to use a dog that doesn't look like a Stafford.
Mm-hmm.
It's offside.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's that sort of education that people need.
Yeah, actually that raises a question. I mean, would you look at a dog, if you've got a clear dog and there's a carrier dog, if it's a good-looking dog, it's got all the Stafford traits that you want it to have, but it carries this thing, you'd still take, if you've got a clear dog to breed with, you'd still take the risk. Like, you'd still go, no, I'm going to have crack.
Well, yeah, I've done it.
Yeah. Oh, there you go.
So, yes, I had, I leased a bitch from another state and put her to my dog who was clear.
Yep.
It was a carrier. The person who leased it to me didn't tell me.
Yeah.
Somebody else did. And so at the end of the day, that was fine. I bred the litter. I kept the ones that I wanted to keep, tested them, and they were clear, fortunately.
Yeah.
So just moved on, and they were best in show winners.
Yeah.
So you just have to have the, you know, the ability to move forward with these things.
Well, I guess, yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? I mean, it probably helps a little bit to eradicate some of those genetic disorders, but also, you know, if it's a good dog, it's a good dog, and if you can have those very good, clear dogs, and then, as you say, a couple of generations down, that problem's no longer an issue, well, everyone wins, don't they? I mean, you know, there's no need to worry about how it's used or if it's used as a weapon or not.
No. Well, the thing is that, you know, the thing is that's one aspect of it. There's other things that you're breeding for as well that you need to either you're using a dog to get those attributes or you've got to breed through it. It's called breeding through the problems.
Yeah.
And, you know, well, those carriers are just one other problem. But you should never forego your type to overcome by this testing.
Right.
I mean, you shouldn't have a lineup of Staffords that don't look like Staffords that are all clear.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, because no show ring is testing for DNA, are they? They're all testing for what they look like.
That's right. They're not testing. You know, I always laugh and say, pity you can't test for type.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the thing is that some people, it's like anything, if you focus on a colour or you focus on one aspect of the standard,
yeah,
you're going to forego everything else, and that includes L2 or whatever else you're testing for.
Yeah, yeah. The Staffordshire Bull Terrier Society of New South Wales is proudly sponsored by Black Hawk Pet Foods. Black Hawk Pet Food gives your dog complete nutrition with everything they need and nothing they don't, including no artificial preservatives, colours or flavours in any of their products. Black Hawk Pet Food. Every ingredient matters.
You know, fortunately for us, we haven't got any of those big problems like other breeds have got.
Mm.
That, you know, that their dogs can just drop down dead or that sort of thing if they've got issues.
I was going to say, like, I mean, I know obviously we're focusing on Staffords, but what are, give us, is there another breed that you can think of offhand that there are major genetic issues in there, or there are something that would do that, as you say, like cause them to just drop dead?
Yeah, Dobermans have an issue. It's a heart issue. Bull terrier, they're all breeds, but you know, the statistics in these breeds are not large.
Yeah,
they're quite small, and they're probably getting smaller because people are testing. So that's a good thing.
Yeah.
But for Staffords, we don't have major problems in our breed.
It also, the other thing I was thinking as we were talking about this around testing, I mean, how long ago were we talking that this actually became a thing? 20 years, 30 years, 40 years ago? Like, is it?
I think it's about, I'd be guessing, I think it's around 20 years that they've been testing.
Yeah.
And, you know, as I say, in some cases with some breeds, with some things, it's a godsend.
Yeah.
But not necessarily for Staffords. But, yeah, you know, the dog fraternity had to show themselves to be responsible.
Yeah.
When things would go wrong with people who bought pets and things would go wrong, you know, like the Brachy breeds and all that sort of thing. People didn't want to be letting people have dogs that would die and be heart. The people would be heartbroken, obviously.
Yeah, of course. Mm. Of course.
So the dog fraternity didn't want to be doing that. They didn't want to be, you know, doing that to anybody, to the public or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, breeding dogs with very, very obvious health problems that would absolutely impact and fairly quickly.
Yes, and nobody wants that to be the case. And, I mean, also, I mean, we breed and love our own dogs. We don't want them dropping dead on us with different things.
Mm. No, of course not. Yeah, it sort of fascinates me, and I sort of think along the lines of, you know, I can't imagine, say, for example, you know, when your family first got into the breeding side of things, you wouldn't have had access to this technology. I mean, it probably A, wouldn't have existed, but B, I mean, I imagine in the early stages it was prohibitively expensive to actually do this. You know, now
it wasn't available at all. No,
yeah,
no. Wasn't there.
Yeah. So it sort of seems to me it's that thing where the breeders have bred the dogs and understood the science of it without actually having, and I mean, this is a positive thing. I'm not saying this is a negative. I think it's incredible that they've had that knowledge and understanding without actually having the science to back it up. So, you know, like it feels to me like they've done an incredible job over the years to, as you say, have these breeds that are pure, have these breeds where they've eradicated health issues and whatever else, without actually having the ability to test.
Having it all figured out without the DNA.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it was quite a thing that if something went that wrong, you stopped breeding with the line.
Yeah, yeah.
So you just stopped, which was probably, it would have been better to have a test because you would have worked out how to breed through it, but because you didn't know how to breed through it, well, then you would stop using it.
Yeah.
Or alternatively, you know, we all knew what dogs through what. I mean, we'd know that Shoemaker would fix your hind ends. Some other dog would fix. Black Tusker was always great for fronts and ears. So you knew what dog was dominant for which positive virtue, and you would breed that way. And you would be working out a science yourself with how to breeding principles.
Yeah,
almost like when you cook something and it's you add a bit of this, you add a bit of that until you get the absolute perfect flavor you want, kind of thing. You know, you've got this dog that has this attribute, so you breed that, and when its pups come up with that attribute, okay, great. Well, now we need this thing, and that comes in, and
well, then you breed to it, and that's something that's been become a thing where you're not allowed to breed that close anymore, but you have to breed to these positives, and these attributes. So if you breed to it, then you cement your line, and you just keep producing puppies that are correct.
Are people using DNA to do that nowadays, or is it still pretty much that old method of knowing your dog, knowing the type and knowing what you want?
I don't know many people know what breeding principles are.
Right.
They just put dogs to bitches and just produce puppies. I don't think they've got a breeding plan. I think that's – we've said this for years, and England said it for years. The top breeders in England were very disappointed that people will just breed and not have a breeding plan. And, you know, a lot of dogs turned out okay were by accident.
Yeah, well, that's interesting, isn't it? It's interesting that, you know, there's not a – there's not a breeding plan. There's not a governing body that's kind of, you know, controlling this.
Well, no. Well, not in this country. I mean, in Europe they have a bit more control, but not in England. But in Europe they have a bit more control. But you know, people don't necessarily, especially commercial breeders, they're breeding for a puppy market. They're not breeding necessarily just to the standard.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the other side of this discussion, isn't it? I mean, there's obviously a whole bunch of people that just want to produce dogs.
Yeah.
They aren't necessarily breeding with the same intent that perhaps your family bred with or other breeders are breeding with, where they're saying, no, we're trying to produce the dog that looks, close enough to the perfect version of this dog. They just want dogs.
Commodity. They just want, something to sell.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that they don't care. I think they want to produce healthy stock, but they don't necessarily have a breeding program to breed to the challenge of breeding something as close to the standard as possible, like perfection.
Yeah.
So you've talked about breeding programs before. So how do you set that up yourself when you want to plan your breeding program, just as a revision?
Well, the key to breeding programs is the mother and the mother of the father. And basically it's like the foundations of a house. You have to have a strong, healthy bitch that produces well, and that she's healthy and will continue to produce healthy stock.
Mm-hmm.
And you put her to something that is compatible with a strong maternal line, and you continue along that way.
Mm-hmm.
That's the basis, and your kennel's only as strong as your foundations, and if they crumble, well then basically, I've seen people do this, they have to start again.
Mm.
Right.
And then I've seen people try to stick with it and end up in a terrible mess. But yeah, that's the thing. It's about breeding to a line that is closest to the standard and healthy.
I feel like I might even actually understand this a little bit now. So if I've got a really good female, really good bitch, and I breed it to a dog with a good bitch, like a good female line, the puppies that I get out of that, the one I should be looking for is the really good looking bitch. I should be looking for that to be the next dog I breed, or the next sort of generation that I use as a basis from a breeding program. Am I on the money there, or is that?
Yeah, the thing is that my mum used to say, you can buy the services, the best dogs in the world, you can't get the bitches.
Yeah.
So, I mean, now they're frozen and all sorts of things, so don't even need the actual dog.
No.
So, at the end of the day, yes, the key to it is having a very strong bitch line.
Right. So if you're a person that's got a dog that you're looking to breed with somebody, you need to have a good, it needs to have a good bitch as its mum, and you need to be looking for a solid bitch. And I feel like I'm just using the word bitch too much here, but that's a whole other thing. And if you've got a really good bitch, you're looking for a dog with a really good bitch. So if you're, even if you're buying frozen sperm, you're looking for something with it. That's what you're looking for to produce a really nice little Stafford or any kind of dog.
Yeah, the thing is that your maternal line's very important and it's solid. But yeah, you're basically looking, but you know, dogs don't look for bitches. Only bitches look for dogs.
Okay. Like,
dogs don't approach the owners of the bitch and say, "I want to use my dog over your bitch."
Yeah.
You go, "Oh, good for you." That's not our plan.
Yeah.
But you know, when I do have a litter, if you want a puppy from her, you're welcome.
Yeah.
Right? So, and then you might want to put that to your dog.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, it's more about, you know, finding the correct and the suitable dogs, of which there's plenty for the bitches.
Yeah.
Especially given the population of Staffords.
Yeah.
Not that people always get that right. But especially the emotive, if you're breeding and you know the lines, yes. If you're breeding and you're just breeding for puppies, well, sometimes you hit the jackpot and sometimes mostly you don't.
Yeah. It's a fascinating subject because, as I said, it strikes me that, you know, and we know you've had over 50 years of experience in the dog world, and you know, we sort of joke that you've probably forgotten more about breeding animals than most people will ever know. But it strikes me that, you know, there's just been perhaps some people who have been very, very clever in this world that have produced some very, very good dogs and bitches, but have perhaps done it because they just inherently understand what to do, and they don't necessarily know the reasons, or they probably do, but they don't know the absolute reasons why it works. They just know that if I do this and I do this and I put it all together like that, that's how it's going to come out and it's going to be a champion.
I don't think there's any of those, Adam. I think people know exactly what they're doing.
Really?
And a lot of people, yeah, study it. I mean, there's somebody rang me the other day and said, "Oh, she doesn't have bull terriers. I got Oppenheimer's book to look at the breeding principles."
Yeah.
So there's people that have come before people and before us that have been successful, and the key to anything is to look to the people that are successful.
Yeah, yeah.
So you look at how they did it and obviously walk with them, or if they've written a book, read it.
Learn off them.
And, I mean, success breeds success. So if you can get something and breed along the same principles, I think by accident is when I mean that, you know, my cousin's got a dog and I've got a bitch, and we put them together and we hit the jackpot by accident because we just put the dog to the bitch. We didn't know the breeding lines.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Yeah, and that's the other thing that it strikes me. I'm thinking along the lines of, you know, is it sometimes just a happy accident?
Is it
just like, oh, shit, that worked, and we don't know why it worked? Or, as you say, one of those other genes pop up and go, hang on, here's a really good part. Like, you know, I mean, we talked about bad version of those polygenes. Is there a good version of it that just pops up and you go, well, that was unexpected?
Well, you can get what's called a flyer.
Okay.
You can put the two dogs together and there's no reason why that should have turned out like that.
Yeah.
Like they're not tightly bred or anything like that. It's just a flyer and it won't produce. Because it's not tightly bred, it won't produce itself.
Right. So no guarantee it'll, you know, if you have...
That's a flyer.
Yeah, yeah.
So you just get this dog and it's, you might put it to bitches and it just doesn't produce anything, and it's because it's not tightly enough bred.
Yeah. It was just a happy coincidence. An accident almost, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, just a flyer and you sort of, there's a dog that's turned up the other day, and I said to somebody, "What's the pedigree of that? It's really nice." When they have, you know, it's a flyer.
Ah, and as a dog person, you went, "Oh, okay."
Yeah, yeah, but I mean, I wish them well. It'll do really well. It's very nice.
Yeah,
but, you know, probably won't produce itself.
No. So it's not going to make any impact on the world post showing in terms of breeding or going out the stud or anything like that.
No, it's a show dog.
Yeah.
So it's a phenotype. It's just a good looking dog. It's not, you know, its pedigree won't produce.
Before we wrap up, because we're closing in on our half an hour, what should, so your advice to people if they're either A, looking for a good dog, or B, wanting to start breeding? I mean, I feel like part of it would be focus on that maternal line, but what else would you give? What else advice would you give people that sort of looking for good dogs and looking at the DNA, or looking at the DNA? Should they be getting them tested?
Well, if they buy from a breeder, it will be tested anyway.
Okay, they
would be usually get a tested dog or clear by parentage.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I don't think that necessarily the testing is a major thing. I know that lots of breeders say my dogs are tested, and that's one reason they sell them, because they're tested and people think, oh dear, it's tested, so it's not going to be sick.
Mm.
I suppose that's a legitimate way of thinking.
Mm.
But on the other hand, if you're going to be breeding, you should be researching what you're buying and what you read. The amount of people that want to ring up and ask for a bitch to breed and haven't even read the standard.
So don't even know what they're looking at.
No. They don't even know what they're looking for. And you go, well, have you read the standard?
Yeah.
No. Well, do you know where to get the standard from? No. I just want to breed.
Yeah.
So I think that's when you're a breeder of long standing, those sorts of questions are the questions that make you determine whether you're going to let somebody have something to breed or not.
Yeah.
Because if somebody's a legitimate student of the breed and is going to breed, they need to at least know the standard of the breed.
Yeah.
Then they need to know, you know, do some research on what they want, what they think is correct to the standard, and then contact the appropriate people and do some research, go to shows, look at the dogs, talk to people.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like anything. I mean, you don't, as I always do an analogy to a car, you don't just go and buy a car. You do some research into, does this car suit me?
Mm-hmm.
You know, do I want a hybrid or do I want petrol? You know, how many seats do I want? Well, it's exactly the same for a dog.
Yeah. Do I want a big car, little car, big dog, little dog?
That's right. What? And, you know, if I want to breed this breed, why do I want to breed it?
Mm. What do I want in it?
Yeah, the way to do that is to make sure that you talk to the right people, come to clubs such as ours. We're happy to help and talk to you and have a chat with you about, you know, how to go about breeding. You need to be members of Dogs New South Wales or whichever body that's in your state. You need to do an exam to make sure that you know what you're doing when you're breeding, to get a breeder's prefix.
Yep.
And all the bodies that are out there have got the same sort of things happening, lots of education and that sort of thing. It's not just, as I keep saying, it's not like the old day. You have a litter under the house and give your mates and the neighbours down the road pups. Mm.
Yeah, I had a dog a couple of dogs ago, beautiful little dog named Bella. And the way I got Bella was I was coming out of a driveway and Bella was running towards me. She was about 10 weeks, 11 weeks old at the time. And I grabbed the dog, stopped the car and grabbed the dog and gave it to the guy chasing after her. And I said, oh, there's your dog, mate. And he said, oh, not my dog. And I said, oh, are you minding it? What are you doing? He goes, no. He goes, I bought it off somebody, but it's supposed to be a bloody Stafford. It's not. And I went, oh. I said, what are you going to do? He goes, I'm about to take it to the pound. Do you want it? And I went, okay, you know, I'll take the dog. And it wasn't a Stafford by any measure. Didn't look like a Stafford at all. I have a picture of it. I'll show you one day. Wasn't a Stafford. But, yeah, he'd been sold a lemon, basically. Sold this pup that was supposed to be a Stafford and absolutely wasn't.
Mm.
You know, so... Don't know what he intended to do with it. I don't think he was – I'm pretty sure he wasn't going to show the dog.
Well, no, even so, I don't understand that. If you walk up and you think you're buying a Stafford, you at least know what they look like.
Yeah. And that's what I was thinking when you were talking about that before. You know, I mean, I had no idea. I obviously had none of this knowledge, but this was over 20 years ago. So I had no idea what I was looking at, but I knew I wasn't looking at a Staffordshire Bull Terrier. I knew that for sure.
Well, that's right. And he did the same. I mean, he knew what breed he wanted to buy, so when he went there, it didn't look like the breed. Nah.
But he still came home with it.
Yeah.
That's right. Maybe he just fell in love with it or something, but clearly not.
He wanted a Stafford. He wanted one. That's the type of dog he wanted, and he didn't get it. And I think he got ripped off.
And
I think he was annoyed as well.
Well, take it back. It's like anything, it's a commodity. He should have taken it back, got his money back. But anyway.
It
ended up with a nice home with you. So that's a good story.
It did, absolutely. Yeah. Very interesting. I could talk DNA with you all day because I'm fascinated by it. But once again, we thank you for your time. And we'll be at the Royal Easter Show in a couple of weeks' time, depending on when you listen to this. If you listen to it after the beginning of April, we won't be there. But if you hear this before then, come and say hello and come and have these discussions. Come and pick our expert's brain because it's a fascinating conversation, I can assure you.
Well, we're here to help, basically. And if people want to, know anything about Staffords, well, then the Staffordshire Bull Terrier Society is very happy to help. It's Australia's foundation club. And its charter is to educate and look after the breed and its enthusiasts.
Mm-hmm.
Come and say hello, and we'll certainly try and do all of those things and absolutely try and educate.
What day is that?
2nd of April.
Yes.
2nd of April. We're there all day in the Dog Pavilion at the Sydney Royal Easter Show.
Yeah, we look forward to seeing you. Love it. You come?
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, we're already planning our days off. We're there. Natalie's already planning what she's wearing.
Oh, good. That's good. That's good. We're excited. That's good.
We are. We had a ball last year. It was great fun. Anyway. All right. Thank you.
All right. See you again. Bye.
Bye.